Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Friday. Shikellamy and Milton coming up tonight. That'll be at 7 o'clock, 6:30 the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK with Kevin Herr and the Chief Dave Ritchie. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection anywhere, and they have water, soda, roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, snacks, and the pickle bar is second to none. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Not only high school football tonight, Penn State Northwestern tomorrow at noon with a 10:30 airtime here on WKOK, but also the Steelers and the Raiders coming up this weekend. And with that in mind, we bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Always good to be here. How are you?
Doing great, Tony. Thanks for the time today. Le'Veon Bell, it sounds like it's an MCL tear. What timetable did they? He's obviously out for the season. What was the timetable they gave on him?
Well, it's, you know, not good. They're confident he'll be back for the season opener. So, he's going to miss some offseason without question. It's about as bad as it could be without it being an ACL. And quite frankly, the time frame is only going to be a little bit better than an ACL. So a very significant injury, obviously, significant blow to him personally, let alone the team. But, it's not the kind of a thing that, a bye week and a couple of games off are going to fix. In fact, it's not the kind of a thing that's going to be, that's going to have him up and around, let alone doing football activities for quite some time. So I think they'd be happy if he was ready to go by training camp, to be honest with you.
Outside of Antonio Brown, there probably is not a better route runner on this team than Le'Veon Bell. What does this do to the pass game?
Well, I think it's huge. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, not only was he a good guy to, receive passes out of the backfield, but like you said, he could line up in the slot, he could line up wide, and he was running, like you just said, wide receiver routes. There are not a lot of running backs that can do that. So that adds just a huge, huge, range to your offense. It allows you to do so much more. Now, D'Angelo Williams is a very good pass receiver out of the backfield. But to expect him to do anywhere near what Le'Veon Bell is able to do, not only with his, obvious physical limitations, and I have physical limitations compared to Bell, that is.
Right.
Like you said, he just, there's just a lot that Bell did that not only is Williams not going to be able to do it, but not a lot of other running backs are going to be able to do that. In addition, the Steelers are still working with, a backup left tackle. Now that's going to be their starting left tackle the rest of the way. But that's an issue. It was an issue, against Cincinnati, against that very good defensive front. And it's going to be an issue the rest of the season. So this is an offense, quite frankly, that was supposed to be the bread and butter of this team. We saw them struggle, against a very good Cincinnati team, but they did struggle. And, it's only going to get tougher as the season goes along with that offense. The defense is playing as well as it can, but, they're limited. And the offense right now, even though a lot of Steeler fans don't want to admit this and the players are not admitting it, this is an offense that is now limited as well.
All right. Because, Williams is a good pass receiver, but he's a check down safety valve pass receiver.
Right, exactly.
That's a big difference between being a guy that you put out there as a every down back that runs routes like a wideout like Bell does.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. And again, Bell is good in the passing game, meaning he can pick up blitzes. He's a great check down guy. Bell was all of those things as well. But like you said, other than their, all pro wide receiver, he was the second best route runner on the team. And that really is a mouthful. It just allowed the offense to do so much. So things that they probably hadn't even taken advantage of yet. But something like that always keeps the defense on their heels. No matter what Bell does, that's always, the defense always has to be aware of that. That is now completely out the door.
Is there a guy that can pick up that can be a third down Shane Vereen kind of guy?
Well, right now there's not. They signed Isaiah Pede, was a very good running back at Cincinnati. I think it was a second round draft pick of the Rams, and that was only 4 years ago, and now he was out of the league. So that tells you what he's done or what he's not done in the NFL. Can he get second life as a third down back? Possibly. At least this is a legitimate NFL player, and they're not, scraping the practice squad to get a guy. It's a guy who has NFL experience and understands the ins and outs of the game and the ins and outs of an NFL offense. But the answer to that really is no. And my guess is they will continue to keep their eyes peeled for either practice squad players or guys who you know have to get bumped down to the practice squad on various teams because of injuries. I don't know that the running back position is set for the rest of the season in Pittsburgh.
Roethlisberger's knee did not look all that steady to me in terms of, like, I mean, he took some delicate hits and he limped. What was the thought process on watching him as he went through this on Sunday?
You know, we probably shouldn't have been surprised. He came back as soon as he could. I do agree with you. He limped a little bit. I think there were a couple of instances where he tried to protect the knee and get rid of the ball faster than he normally would. He was high on, you know, when his passes missed, they were high. Now, that's most quarterbacks or a lot of quarterbacks when they miss time are going to be, when their timing is off, they are going to miss high. And he did. But, yeah, you know, I do agree. Now, they have a bye week coming up after this week. That will help Roethlisberger quite a bit. You know, he's going to have to try to, you know, play on this knee one more time, I think, before he's able to really, you know, give it some more rest. And that should help. One other thing, though, I thought that was a little concerning was, you know, Roethlisberger threw three interceptions. One of them was high. That was his last one. The other two were frankly, bad decisions
right.
that Roethlisberger does not usually make. He didn't see a safety on one pick, and then he made one of those, you know, second-year Ben Roethlisberger interceptions where he avoided the traffic, got out of the pocket, avoided a hit, and instead of living to throw another down, he tried to force the ball in, and that was a huge interception, quite frankly, that actually flipped the script and allowed Cincinnati to take the lead. So he did not play well. He was the first to acknowledge that.
What about the use of Heath Miller in all this? When he's been thrown to, Tony, they've been short plays. I mean, the number of times where I've kind of chuckled to myself a little bit as the crowd chants Heath, it's a one-yard gain, and I'm not exaggerating here. It's a 1-2 yard
yeah.
gain. What you about know, the usage of him down the field a little bit? I don't mean 20 yards down the field, but a little right. bit further down the field.
You know, they had a little bit more of that when Roethlisberger came back, especially early. And then I think Cincinnati must have tried to take that away because
yeah.
you only saw that really the first drive, to be honest with you. That was a, you know, that's the best the offense looked that whole day. It was their first drive where they went 80 yards and stuck it into the end zone. They didn't do any of that the rest of the way. So I think Cincinnati must have done a little bit of something to take Heath Miller away a bit.
Right.
One interesting thing was when Roethlisberger was out and when Kelvin Beachum got hurt, the left tackle, the excuse as to why Miller didn't get targeted was he was in to block, you know, so often to protect, you know, the new left tackle against
right.
Kansas City. Well, that new left tackle was back, you know, in the same game, and for some reason they were able to find Roethlisberger a lot more. So certainly, I'm sorry, they were able to find Miller a lot more. Roethlisberger was. So, you know, I give credit to Cincinnati for taking that away a little bit. And quite
right.
frankly, the only downfield success they've had this year has been to Antonio Brown, and that hasn't been recently.
Yeah, he's 14 yards a catch. Miller's at 10 yards a catch, but that includes a 26-yarder along the way to them at this stage. All right, so now let's get to the front seven. What have been some of the things in the front seven, Tony, that have impressed you?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, Cameron Hayward has been tremendous.
Yes.
He has been everything that he was advertised to be when they drafted him. He's always been a very good run stopper. He's become dynamic in the pass rush. I was not just surprised, I was shocked at how well that front seven played without Stephon Tuitt. This is a guy who has had a fantastic year. He had the ankle injury two games ago, didn't play this week, probably won't play next week, hasn't played for 2 weeks now, actually. And you really felt Tuitt's absence against Kansas City. But quite frankly, Steve McClendon played a much, much better game against Cincinnati than he did against Kansas City, and I think that was a big part of the front seven success. Bud Dupree has been fantastic.
Yes,
he's not getting the you know the stats aren't there. He's not probably not getting the you know the nationwide attention, but he is having a very, very good season for a rookie linebacker in a Keith Butler defense. And quite frankly, the fact that I think Keith Butler is willing to change things up, he's willing to go 4-3 when he needs to, I think has maybe masked some of the deficiencies that they have in their 3-4 talents. Because other than Hayward and Tuitt, it really is a pretty significant drop-off. And I say that having already acknowledged that Steve McClendon played well.
Ed Dupree has 16 tackles this year. Four of them are sacks. He actually leads the team in sacks right now with four. Is Lawrence Timmons underappreciated?
He is. I think he is. You know, he's a guy who, again, you know, the numbers aren't necessarily, the numbers don't jump off the page in each individual game. By the end of the year, you certainly notice he's made a lot of tackles. He does a lot in coverage. A lot of times, Timmons gets blamed when you see Rob Gronkowski, you know, catching a pass for a touchdown, or when you see you know, any one of these tight ends that have given the Steelers fits, Antonio Gates or whoever it may be. Well, this, you know, that's when you notice Timmons sometimes. He's you know, when you don't notice him, or when he's not letting the tight end get off the line of scrimmage, or when he's not letting that guy, you know, he's disrupting a route and therefore making the tight end not an option in the passing game. Those kind of things happen more often than not. Timmons can also move up, and quite frankly, he can play right on the line of scrimmage. He's a big enough guy and a strong enough guy that he's able to do that. And, you know, he's just one of those, you know, lunch pail kind of a guy that really fits in well. He doesn't have a whole lot to say. He doesn't blow his own horn, lets James Harrison sort of do that, or he spent a long time letting James Harrison do that. But yeah, I think he is underappreciated. I think he, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, he was at his peak. There are some times where he looked like, you know, he looks like a guy who may be starting the downhill process of his career. But he's not downhill by any means yet. He's still a very good player.
Antonio Brown is 15th in the NFL right now in punt returns at 8.9 a return. What's missing there right now? Because he can be dynamic.
And he hasn't been. You're exactly right. He can be, and he absolutely hasn't been, and they still want to continue to give him the chance to be. You know, again, that's a great question. It's a great question. The Steelers are also, you know, they're scratching their heads as well. The kick return game hasn't functioned very well for the Steelers this year either, although that's obviously I think teams are still trying to figure out how to get kick returns now with the rules changes over the past couple of years. But, yeah, when you talk about punt returns, this is a guy who has been the kind of a guy who not only does he score occasionally, but he's broken those 40-yard returns that flips the field, and we just haven't seen that from him. And again, I don't know whether it's Brown or whether it's simply the coverage or what. The special teams haven't changed all that much since last year. In fact, the Steelers were confident that they got better as far as the return game and as far as the coverage units. But we, you know, you're absolutely right. He hasn't done that. And for an offense lacking their biggest playmaker right now, that, you know, that's an important facet to have.
How do you view Oakland, and in particular, how do you view Derek Carr?
Oh, I think this is a much, much better Oakland team. I mean, geez, when these are bad Oakland teams, they beat the Steelers. You know, Terrell Pryor was beating the Steelers. You know, in fact, you can go back and probably pull some names out of the past about Oakland Raiders quarterbacks who have beaten the Steelers. For some reason, they've struggled against this team for a long time now, probably about the last decade. But boy, that AC/DC, Amari Cooper and Derek Carr, that really is quite a hookup right now. Some great young players on that Raiders team. I think Carr's a guy who is to me, he's a patient quarterback. He's not forcing things. He's not making a ton of mistakes. And, you know, that's certainly huge. And then you look on the defensive side, and Khalil Mack has got to be one of the best defensive players, and one of the best linebackers, at least, in the NFL right now. So this is a team that could easily walk away with a victory. And if that happens, then the Steelers are really, really in trouble as far as any kind of playoff appearance goes. So it's going to be a battle for Pittsburgh the rest of the way. We saw a great defensive performance last week, Steve, but I don't know if we're going to see that every week. We need to see that a couple more times before I believe in that. And I believe they can stop Cooper and Carr.
To me, among the young quarterbacks in this league, Derek Carr is the guy that they don't talk about enough. I mean, I watch him. I just like the look of this guy. This guy has the look.
He does have the look. I agree. I guess that's the curse of being in Oakland, right? I mean, that's been such a bad franchise for so long. You know, we just assume they're going to lose every game. All of a sudden, we look up, and they're quite frankly in the wild card.
Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Always enjoy it. Thank you.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Next half hour, Zach Peerless, NUSports.com, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options. auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Friday. Shikalimi and Milton coming up tonight. That'll be at 7 o'clock, 6:30 the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK with Kevin Hur and the Chief Dave Ritchie. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection anywhere, and they have water, soda, roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, snacks, and the pickle bar is second to none. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Not only high school football tonight, Penn State Northwestern tomorrow at noon with a 10:30 airtime here on WKOK, but also the Steelers and the Raiders coming up this weekend. And with that in mind, we bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Always good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great, Tony. Thanks for the time today. Le'Veon Bell, it sounds like it's an MCL tear. What timetable did they – he's obviously out for the season. What was the timetable they gave on him?
Well, it's, you know, not good. They're confident he'll be back for the season opener. So, he's going to miss some offseason without question. It's about as bad as it could be without it being an ACL, and quite frankly, the time frame is only going to be a little bit better than an ACL. So a very significant injury, obviously, significant blow to him personally, let alone the team. But, it's not the kind of a thing that, a bye week and a couple of games off are going to fix. In fact, it's not the kind of a thing that's going to be, that's going to have him up and around, let alone doing football activities for quite some time. So I think they'd be happy if he was ready to go by training camp, to be honest with you.
Outside of Antonio Brown, there probably is not a better route runner on this team than Le'Veon Bell. What does this do to the pass game?
Well, I think it's huge. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, not only was he a good guy to, receive passes out of the backfield, but like you said, he could line up in the slot, he could line up wide, and he was running, like you just said, wide receiver routes. There are not a lot of running backs that can do that. So that adds just a huge, huge, range to your offense. It allows you to do so much more. Now, D'Angelo Williams is a very good pass receiver out of the backfield. But to expect him to do anywhere near what Le'Veon Bell is able to do, not only with his, obvious physical limitations, and I have physical limitations compared to Bell, that is.
Right.
Like you said, he just, there's just a lot that Bell did that not only is Williams not going to be able to do it, but not a lot of other running backs are going to be able to do that. In addition, the Steelers are still working with, a backup left tackle. Now that's going to be their starting left tackle the rest of the way. But that's an issue. It was an issue, against Cincinnati, against that very good defensive front. And it's going to be an issue the rest of the season. So this is an offense, quite frankly, that was supposed to be the bread and butter of this team. We saw them struggle, against a very good Cincinnati team, but they did struggle. And, it's only going to get tougher as the season goes along with that offense. The defense is playing as well as it can, but, they're limited. And the offense right now, even though a lot of Steeler fans don't want to admit this and the players are not admitting it, this is an offense that is now limited as well.
All right. Because, Williams is a good pass receiver, but he's a check down safety valve pass receiver.
Right, exactly.
That's a big difference between being a guy that you put out there as a every down back that runs routes like a wideout like Bell does.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. And again, Bell is good in the passing game, meaning he can pick up blitzes. He's a great check down guy. Bell was all of those things as well. But like you said, other than their, all pro wide receiver, he was the second best route runner on the team, and that really is a mouthful. It just allowed the offense to do so much. So things that they probably hadn't even taken advantage of yet. But something like that always keeps the defense on their heels. No matter what Bell does, that's always the defense always has to be aware of that. That is now completely out the door.
Is there a guy that can pick up that can be a third down Shane Vereen kind of guy?
Well, right now there's not. They signed Isaiah Pede. Was a very good running back at Cincinnati. I think it was a second-round draft pick of the Rams, and that was only 4 years ago, and now he was out of the league. So that tells you what he's done or what he's not done in the NFL. Can he get second life as a third-down back? Possibly. At least this is a legitimate NFL player, and they're not, scraping the practice squad to get a guy. It's a guy who has NFL experience and understands the ins and outs of the game and the ins and outs of an NFL offense. But the answer to that really is no. And my guess is they will continue to keep their eyes peeled for either practice squad players or guys who have to get bumped down to the practice squad on various teams because of injuries. I don't know that the running back position is set for the rest of the season in Pittsburgh.
Roethlisberger's knee did not look all that steady to me in terms of he took some delicate hits and he limped. What was the thought process on watching him as he went through this on Sunday?
We probably shouldn't have been surprised. He came back as soon as he could. I do agree with you. He limped a little bit. I think there were a couple of instances where he tried to protect the knee and get rid of the ball faster than he normally would. He was high on, when his passes missed, they were high. Now that's most quarterbacks or a lot of quarterbacks when they miss time are going to be, when their timing is off, they are going to miss high. And he did. But I do agree. Now, they have a bye week coming up after this week. That will help Roethlisberger quite a bit. He's going to have to try to, play on this knee one more time, I think, before he's able to really, give it some more rest. And that should help. One other thing, though, I thought that was a little concerning was, Roethlisberger threw three interceptions. One of them was high. That was his last one. The other two were frankly bad decisions that Roethlisberger does not usually make. He didn't see a safety on one pick, and then he made one of those second year Ben Roethlisberger interceptions where he avoided the traffic, got out of the pocket, avoided a hit, and instead of living to throw another down, he tried to force the ball in, and that was a huge interception. Quite frankly, that actually flipped the script and allowed Cincinnati to take the lead. So he did not play well. He was the first to acknowledge that.
What about the use of Heath Miller in all this? When he's been thrown to, Tony, they've been short plays. I mean, the number of times where I've kind of chuckled to myself a little bit as the crowd chants Heath, it's a one-yard gain, and I'm not exaggerating here. It's a 1-2 yard gain. What about the usage of him down the field a little bit? I don't mean 20 yards down the field, but a little bit further down the field.
They had a little bit more of that when Roethlisberger came back, especially early. And then I think Cincinnati must have tried to take that away because you only saw that really the first drive, to be honest with you. That was that's the best the offense looked that whole day. It was their first drive where they went 80 yards and stuck it into the end zone. They didn't do any of that the rest of the way. So I think Cincinnati must have done a little bit of something to take Heath Miller away a bit.
Right.
One interesting thing was when Roethlisberger was out and when Kelvin Beachum got hurt, the left tackle, the excuse as to why Miller didn't get targeted was he was in to block, so often to protect, the new left tackle against Kansas City. Well, that new left tackle was back, in the same game, and for some reason they were able to find Roethlisberger a lot more. So certainly, they were able to find Miller a lot more. Roethlisberger was. So, I give credit to Cincinnati for taking that away a little bit. And quite frankly, the only downfield success they've had this year has been to Antonio Brown, and that hasn't been recently.
Yeah, he's 14 yards a catch. Miller's at 10 yards a catch, but that includes a 26-yarder along the way to them at this stage. All right, so now let's get to the front seven. What have been some of the things in the front seven, Tony, that have impressed you?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, Cameron Hayward has been tremendous.
Yes.
He has been everything that he was advertised to be when they drafted him. He's always been a very good run stopper. He's become dynamic in the pass rush. I was not just surprised, I was shocked at how well that front seven played without Stephon Tuitt. This is a guy who has had a fantastic year. He had the ankle injury two games ago, didn't play this week, probably won't play next week, hasn't played for 2 weeks now, actually. And you really felt Tuitt's absence against Kansas City. But quite frankly, Steve McClendon played a much, much better game against Cincinnati than he did against Kansas City, and I think that was a big part of the front seven's success. Bud Dupree has been fantastic.
He's not getting the
stats aren't there. He's not probably not getting the the nationwide attention, but he is having a very, very good season for a rookie linebacker in a Keith Butler defense. And quite frankly, the fact that I think Keith Butler is willing to change things up, he's willing to go 4-3 when he needs to, I think has maybe masked some of the deficiencies that they have in their 3-4 talent. Because other than Hayward and Tuitt, it really is a pretty significant drop-off. And I say that having already acknowledged that Steve Mosen played well.
Ed Dupree has 16 tackles this year. Four of them are sacks. He actually leads the team in sacks right now with four. Is Lawrence Timmons underappreciated?
He is. I think he is. You know, he's a guy who, again, you know, the numbers aren't necessarily – the numbers don't jump off the page in each individual game. By the end of the year, you certainly notice he's made a lot of tackles. He does a lot in coverage. A lot of times Timmons gets blamed when you see Rob Gronkowski, you know, catching a pass for a touchdown, or when you see – any one of these tight ends that have given the Steelers fits, Antonio Gates or whoever it may be, that's when you notice Timmons sometimes. He's when you don't notice him, or when he's not letting the tight end get off the line of scrimmage, or when he's not letting that guy, he's disrupting a route and therefore making the tight end not an option in the passing game. Those kind of things happen more often than not. Timmons can also move up, and quite frankly, he can play right on the line of scrimmage. He's a big enough guy and a strong enough guy that he's able to do that. And, he's just one of those, lunch pail kind of a guys that really fits in well. He doesn't have a whole lot to say. He doesn't blow his own horn, lets James Harrison sort of do that, or he spent a long time letting James Harrison do that. But I think he is underappreciated. I think he, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, he was at his peak. There are some times where he looks like a guy who may be starting the downhill process of his career, but he's not downhill by any means yet. He's still a very good player.
Antonio Brown is 15th in the NFL right now in punt returns at 8.9 a return. What's missing there right now? Because he can be dynamic.
And he hasn't been. You're exactly right. He can be, and he absolutely hasn't been, and they still want to continue to give him the chance to be. That's a great question. It's a great question. The Steelers are also, they're scratching their heads as well. The kick return game hasn't functioned very well for the Steelers this year either, although that's obviously I think teams are still trying to figure out how to get kick returns now with the rules changes over the past couple of years. But, when you talk about punt returns, this is a guy who has been the kind of a guy who not only does he score occasionally, but he's broken those 40-yard returns that flips the field, and we just haven't seen that from him. I don't know whether it's Brown or whether it's simply the coverage or what. The special teams haven't changed all that much since last year. In fact, the Steelers were confident that they got better. As far as the return game and as far as the coverage units, you're absolutely right. He hasn't done that. And for an offense lacking their biggest playmaker right now, that's an important facet to have.
How do you view Oakland, and in particular, how do you view Derek Carr?
Oh, I think this is a much, much better Oakland team. I mean, geez, when these are bad Oakland teams, they beat the Steelers. You know, Terrell Pryor was beating the Steelers. In fact, you can go back and probably pull some names out of the past about Oakland Raiders quarterbacks who have beaten the Steelers. For some reason, they've struggled against this team for a long time now, probably about the last decade. But boy, that AC/DC, Amari Cooper and Derek Carr, that really is quite a hookup right now. Some great young players on that Raiders team. I think Carr's a guy who is to me, he's a patient quarterback. He's not forcing things. He's not making a ton of mistakes. That's certainly huge. And then you look on the defensive side, and Khalil Mack has got to be one of the best defensive players, and one of the best linebackers, at least, in the NFL right now. So this is a team that could easily walk away with a victory. And if that happens, then the Steelers are really, really in trouble as far as any kind of playoff appearance goes. So it's going to be a battle for Pittsburgh the rest of the way. We saw a great defensive performance last week, Steve, but I don't know if we're going to see that every week. We need to see that a couple more times before I believe in that, and I believe they can stop Cooper and Carr.
To me, among the young quarterbacks in this league, Derek Carr is the guy that they don't talk about enough. I mean, I watch him. I just like the look of this guy. This guy has the look.
He does have the look. I agree. I guess that's the curse of being in Oakland, right?
You're right.
That's been such a bad franchise for so long. you know, we just assume they're going to lose every game. All of a sudden, we look up, and they're quite frankly in the wild card.
Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Always enjoy it. Thank you.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Next half hour, Zach Peerless, NUSports.com, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Friday. Our featured game coming up tonight on News Radio 1070 WKOK will be Shikellamy and Milton and the best in the business, Kevin Herr and Dave Ritchie, combining forces tonight to bring you that game for you at 6:30 with our airtime, and 7 o'clock the kickoff as Shikellamy plays at Milton this evening. And, of course, you'll have the Milton broadcast, by the way, on WMLP with Steve Williams, 1380. Sealands Grove plays tonight. You'll hear that on Eagle 107, and Lewisburg in action tonight as well. You'll hear that on the Valley 100.9. All right, today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket imports domestics microbrews, best selection anywhere. Did I mention beer? Yeah, I think I just did. And also, they have water, soda, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. Well laid out. The entire store. Plenty of help to get the cases to the car for you. Free parking as well. And the pickle bar is second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And Kevin, of course, driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week. He'll tell you about the next one coming up later tonight. All right. Mentioned the Steelers. Bengals won last night, although Johnny Manziel played pretty well. Bengals did win last night. Steelers have Oakland coming up this weekend. And meanwhile, college football, the weeding out process. Last night, Baylor hung on, won 31-24 at Kansas State with Seth Russell now out for the season at quarterback. You've got Oklahoma State in action against TCU, two undefeated teams, weeding out process. Florida State and Clemson, part of the weeding out process. And, of course, LSU, Alabama tomorrow night at 8. Our game tomorrow, Penn State, Northwestern. Penn State 7-2, 4-1 of the Big Ten. Northwestern 6-2. Should be a really good game. 10:30 the airtime tomorrow on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And the kickoff is set for noon. We now bring in Zach Peerless. Zach Peerless will join us on the show. Zach, of course, does a great job covering Northwestern for InsideNUSports.com. Zach, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Zach, let's get to it. They're 6-2 right now. What do you like about them, and what do they need to be better at going forward?
So you start Northwestern 6-2. It starts all up with the defense, especially up front. You have Dean Lowry on the left end, and then Deontay Gibson on the right. Those are two bookend tackles, two guys that could likely play on Sunday next year. Not only have they provided great senior leadership up front, but they've really just gotten it done. You talk about Dean Lowry, six tackles for losses a couple weeks ago at Nebraska, and then behind him, Anthony Walker in the middle is just a tackling machine. And then offensively, it's been a struggle for Northwestern, but you saw against Nebraska a couple weeks ago, Clayton Thorson finally got it going, at least on the ground, then in the second half with his arm. So there's some promising signs there. They still need to be more consistent running the ball. But at 6-2, I think most Northwestern fans would be pretty satisfied.
Zach, when you've talked to the players and you've listened to Pat, did the bye week come at a good time for them?
I think that it did. I think that maybe not necessarily after such like a heartbreaking loss, but obviously it's a big week after a big win. They snapped that two-game losing streak by beating Nebraska on the road, which was huge. And they had some injuries. They haven't been too injured this year, which has been nice to see after the past couple seasons. They had a ton of injuries, but they're getting Matt Harris back. He's a really good cornerback. He had some broken bones in the space after Michigan, actually, and that bye week obviously helps the mental side as well. So it was definitely a good time and one that they definitely needed.
All right, let's get to Clayton Thorson for a moment. As you've watched him develop, Zach, what are some areas where you feel he is better? What are some areas where, in order for Northwestern to be better, he must be better?
So over the course of the season, one of the things I think he's definitely improved on, and he finally showed it against Nebraska, is that he can use his legs. Clayton Thorson has terrific straight-line speed, and once he breaks out of the pocket, he can pick up chunks of yards at a time. You saw he had a 68-yard run and a 49-yard run in the first half against Nebraska. That was basically all of Northwestern's offense. And so he needs to continue to do that. You saw it a little bit less early in the season. He had that 42-yard run against Stanford for a touchdown. But as long as he keeps getting outside of the pocket and getting downfield, that'll be huge. He's started to show more confidence in the pocket, but one of the biggest things is he just needs to be more accurate, just barely completing over 50% of his passes. He can be a little erratic at times, and his wide receivers haven't helped, but he still struggles sometimes with his accuracy.
What about Justin Jackson? I felt his emergence last year was such a great plus for Northwestern. Has he picked up where he left off?
So through the first five games, Justin Jackson was absolutely outstanding. Really, when the offense struggled passing the ball, he was there for them. But in the past three games, he really hasn't gotten the ball that much. You look at his total carries, he's had 12, 14, and 10, which is not nearly what he was getting the first 5 weeks. And he's Northwestern's best skill position player. He's a playmaker with the ball in his hands. And 2 weeks ago against Nebraska, what was impressive was his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. Third and three with about 3.5 minutes left. If Northwestern doesn't convert, they're only up two and they're punting the ball away again. And instead, they swing a pass out to Justin Jackson in the flat. He made a guy miss, rumbled for about 30 yards. So he's been making an impact. I'd like to see him get the ball a little bit more, though, moving forward.
Pat Fitzgerald is only 1-8 following bye weeks. Has it, A, been brought up? And if so, what's been the discussion about it?
Yeah, so that is definitely something that's been brought up. It was brought up in his Monday press conference. It was brought up last week. I think that the discussion is just what's different, and I'm not sure there's anything that he can necessarily answer about it. I think that, like most coaches, he probably gives the team a little bit of a breather during the bye week, not as hard practicing. He said this week they went pretty hard in the weight room instead of necessarily on the practice field. But I think the biggest thing is Northwestern just struggles when it turns from September to October and November. That's something that we saw this year even a little bit when they went on that two-game losing streak. I think that it's tough to really say that the 1-8 record you mentioned after the bye week is Pat Fitzgerald's fault. I just think that it's a little bit of a coincidence, honestly. Maybe they've played some tougher opponents coming out of that bye week.
Right. Zach Perilous with us from InsideNU.com. The game is an 11 a.m. start, your time, noon here. We know what it's like with noon starts here. It takes a little while for the student section to get loaded up into the stadium and so forth. What's the atmosphere like normally for an 11 a.m. start? And how concerned do they get with 11 a.m. starts there?
Yeah, so actually Northwestern only played one non-11 a.m. start home game this year, and their next home game is Purdue. That's going to be an 11 a.m. game as well. So it's something that the fans are actually pretty used to, and the fans at Northwestern typically don't arrive at on time for kickoff. They usually get there about midway through the first quarter, so probably 11:30 Central time is when you'll start to see the crowd really file in. The big thing this weekend is it's family weekend up at Northwestern, so I think you'll see a bigger crowd than normal. And the overall atmosphere, it's sometimes lacking, but when Northwestern has a quality opponent like Penn State coming to town, I think that it'll be a pretty decent crowd.
want to go back to the offense for a moment. There's a guy that I think is absolutely draftable. I could see anywhere in rounds 5 or 6, somewhere in that neighborhood, Danny Vitale getting picked. What has he meant in that super back role, which is a hybrid of a tight end and an H-back? What has he meant in that role for this offense?
Yeah, Dan Vitale is one of my favorite players on the team from an aspect of he's willing to do whatever he has to do to help the team win. You'll see him on Saturday. He'll line up in the backfield. He'll line up on the line. He'll line up even outside, kind of in a wide receiver role at times. He's a leader of this team. He's kind of the emotional center of the team. He's just one of the hardest working guys, honestly. As far as on the field, he does everything that he can to help this team win. He's Clayton Thorson's check down guy, favorite option, leading wide receiver. And the best thing about him from a purely football standpoint is he's one of those guys that's too big for a lot of safeties, too fast for a lot of linebackers. So he's kind of the rock of that offense, especially when Justin Jackson isn't getting the looks he's accustomed to.
Back to defense for a moment with you, Zach. And you mentioned Matthew Harris getting back into the mix. He had fractured or broke cheekbones. I think it was in the Michigan game. And he's coming back. They still have Watkins there and Van Hoos. Now, Nick Van Hoos and Harris have combined for 11 interceptions in their career total, 5 by Harris, 3 this year, and Van Hoos has 6. What's made those two corners special, and what's that allowed them to do defensively because of the play of the two corners?
Yeah, you mentioned it. Basically, their strength is that they're such a good tandem. Matthew Harris kind of provides that physical superiority. You can kind of just put him on an island. Nick Van Hoos is a very smart corner. He's not going to get beaten deep too often. He's going to make the tackles in the run game. He's just a smart player, a senior leader there. And I think that they work well off one another. They're a very, very cohesive unit. A lot of the guys in the defensive backfield actually live together, study film together. So basically, I think that just that communication, that cohesiveness is what's huge. And then on the field, you have just two guys that are very solid players, very smart players, and veteran players as well, which always helps.
They also sub-package with this team. They'll take 4 out and bring 4 in. They'll bring Adenabo in, number 7 on the edge. They'll bring Max Chapman in, number 1. They'll bring Nate Hall in, 32. And they'll bring McShepard in, number 17, into the mix in what they would call their nickel package. How cohesive has that nickel package been because they do sub the way they do?
I think that they've done a very good job. You talk about Nate Hall in the linebacking core. He's a guy that's a really good athlete there. He comes in especially on third downs, like you mentioned, to stop the pass, and he can run with pretty much anyone. We've seen him matched up on tight ends, even on wide receivers at some points during the year. Odenebo and Chapman, two guys that are really counted on to get pressure up front. And then McShepard, he can play inside, struggled a little bit outside while Matt Harris is out, but he's a guy that's very versatile. And I think that those guys, the biggest thing is they know what they have to do and they get it done. They know when they're going to be coming onto the field and they know what their job is. So that's been a very strong point as well for the Northwestern defense.
Zach Peerless joining us from InsideNU.com. Zach, what's been enjoyable for you in covering this team, covering the staff?
Yeah, so the biggest thing to me that's been really just a high point of this season has been that this team was not expected to be good. It was a team that was maybe projected at most 7 wins, and here they are through 8 games, they have 6 wins. So there's still a possibility, obviously, that they only wind up with 7 wins. It's not an easy schedule coming out the rest of the way, except for Purdue. But really just the fact that this team is so young and they've had a lot of success this year. You talked about last year, everything seemed to be down. Everything seemed to be kind of sad about this team and that they weren't meeting expectations. But this team this year is really young. They're kind of surpassing expectations. And then you can look ahead to the future and see Clayton Thorson, redshirt freshman, right. Justin Jackson, true sophomore. And that a lot of the skill positions, they have a lot of young depth. And that's honestly the most exciting part, I think.
What's the atmosphere there leading into this Penn State game and the thought on Penn State?
So we talked a little bit to Clayton Thorson earlier in the week, and he knows how good that Penn State front four is. That's a very talented unit. I'm sure that you guys talk about it a lot. But there's a ton of respect for Penn State, not only as a program, but as a team. Penn State, you look at their record, 7-2. You look at the fact that they've beaten everyone that they should beat, and they've lost to two very, very high-quality teams. There's a lot of respect coming into this matchup. But I think having had the bye week, Northwestern's going to be ready to play. They have a lot of confidence that this bye week is going to be different than Pat Fitzgerald's kind of legacy of post-bye week games.
Like everybody, you'll have a checklist going in as to what you think the swing factors happen to be. So what are the swing factors that swing it to Penn State or swing it to Northwestern?
So the thing that swings it to Penn State, I'll start with Penn State, is that front four. Northwestern's offensive line has been kind of an up-and-down unit. They were really good to start the year. They could run the ball well, which obviously gave Clayton Thorson more time to pass. And then during those losses to Michigan and Iowa, Justin Jackson just had nowhere to go. The offensive line just was not opening up holes. And the thought was against Nebraska that Northwestern would be able to open up some holes. Obviously, you talk about Michigan and Iowa are two premier defensive units. But, again, Justin Jackson really didn't get a lot of room. So the swing factor there is going to be the front four. If Penn State's front four can continue to beat if Northwestern's front five can't deal with Penn State's front four, then it's going to be a long day for the Wildcats. And then I think the swing factor for Northwestern is, again, their ability to win in the trenches. I talked earlier, Dean Lowry and Deontay Gibson, two really good ends. Yeah. And obviously Penn State's had a lot of trouble protecting Christian Hackenberg. So it's going to be, I think, who wins the trenches and who can keep their quarterback's jerseys clean and who can open up some lanes. Obviously, Saquon Barkley is a terrific running back there. You're going to see two terrific running backs on Saturday.
What's the thought process out there about Christian Hackenberg?
Yeah, so Pat Fitzgerald called Christian Hackenberg one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the nation, which kind of ruffled some feathers, but there's an immense respect for Christian Hackenberg and what he can do. Christian Hackenberg struggled last year against Northwestern, but everybody at Northwestern knows how good he is, what a special talent he is, and they know that the struggles with the offensive line is what's kind of hurt him as far as statistically. But there's an immense respect for him, as there should be.
All right, so now you go into this one. What's game day like for you?
Game day for me, for
yeah.
an 11 o'clock game,
yeah.
It's a get up at about 8 o'clock, be at the stadium by 9, scouting out. We go down to the field, watch the players warm up, do a little bit of a report on the weather, which it's going to be cold. It's actually been really nice this week up here in Evanston, but it's going to be cold this weekend. And after that, back up to the press box, then back after the game down to press conferences, press conference notes, and then head out of there probably usually 2 or 3 hours after the final whistle blows.
How often are you filing? How many stories will you file? Will you tweet during the game and so forth?
Yeah, so Inside NU will be tweeting. We'll be tweeting out all of our pre-week stuff throughout the morning of the game. And then after the game, we'll have press conference notes from Northwestern's press conference. We'll have an immediate, like, rapid reaction story that goes up as soon as the clock hits zeros in the fourth quarter. And then for an 11 o'clock game, we'll have two stories usually afterwards, kind of a bigger view of the game, and then one more of a column of the game. And then the following morning, we'll have a Around the Big Ten segment, and then we'll have a player grade segment as well.
Terrific stuff. Zach, thanks so much. I look forward to meeting you when I go out there this weekend.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
Zach Perlis, InsideNUSports.com. Kickoff set for noon tomorrow. We're on beginning at 10:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And, of course,
Bucknell coming up this weekend as well on Eagle 107. Speaking of Eagle 107, Philadelphia Eagles, big one Sunday night. Dallas Cowboys, AT&T Stadium. I know we mentioned the Steelers with Tony DeFazio in the first half hour. Eagles have a big one at Dallas. I don't care if Tony Romo's watching on the sidelines or not. It's the Eagles and the Cowboys head-to-head Sunday night at 8:30. That should be a heck of a game on Sunday Night Football, and it's a game that the Eagles need, so looking forward to that. Plenty more coming up. Next hour, Sandy Barber, Penn State's athletic director, Dave Ennett, the play-by-play voice of Northwestern football and basketball. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.